who didn't want to wear, she wanted to wear these contact lenses so that she would look like this other woman who in fact wore glasses in the party, who no one would talk to her at all, because she was wearing glasses. So the idea that the contact lens company was selling the concept that you should wear contact lenses because to wear glasses makes you an unattractive and unmarketable person in our society, which is counteracted by, say, somebody like Sophia Loren, who has her own glasses company now, and increasingly
who wears glasses in public.
Who does wear real life glasses or whatever. Then again, I wanted to really talk about kind of what's happening right now. There is a group called PWD, which stands for Performers with Disabilities, MIDI. And I have something to do actually is hand out our packets, and then we can go over the things that we have in the packet.
Can I bring them around?
That's fine. Sure. Performers with Disabilities is a group that got together about 3 years ago, and the first item in your handout describes what they are. 3 years ago, a woman named Catherine Diamond, who is an actress who also is a registered sign language interpreter, she and a comedian by the name of Henry Holden got together and formed a joint affirmative action committee called Performers with Disabilities Committee. And what they did is they got a representative from the three major performing artists unions, Actors Equity, Screen Actors Guild, and AFTRA, which is the American Federation of Television, Radio, and Arts, to really try to promote increasing awareness of disability in the media. And they really had two specific goals. First of all, was to develop a roster of disabled performers who were interested in being in television, film, or theater, and that these are people who had been locked out for whatever reason, and that these people wanted to be part of it. And so it was really seen as an affirmative action thing. In fact, the committee was dubbed together the regular affirmative action committee that deals with race, ethnicity, and gender issues. So that was a real strength of looking at all this in a civil rights context. And one of the things that they're doing right now is Catherine Diamond, in fact, had said in one of your articles, the second article, which is IDD News, and this talks a lot about PWD and what it's done, and also talks a certain amount about advertising.
Can I just say just one moment?
Yes.
The ads in here for the shows, by the way, that's
we're gonna,
well.
Yes. Anyway. Well, those were in there for a very specific reason, to show you the advertising that's done about television portrayals of disability. At any rate, one of the things that Catherine Diamond says, and I think that this is always a question that I have in my mind whenever I see a movie about disability or I read something about disability. Catherine Diamond says that whatever the reason, the public awareness of disability issues is on the increase. 90% of the time that somebody hires a person with a disability, it seems that at least part of the reason is that the employer has a disability or has had a positive personal experience with family or friends who are disabled. And so I often wonder, you know, Jane was talking about the Levi's and the McDonald's and the, what's the third one, Jane?
Newprint.
And Newprint. Was somebody on the board of any of those three products, you know, did they have a disabled son or daughter, or were they themselves disabled? There's an example that that was used in the IDD News on Chrysler. And Chrysler has a car called, Plymouth. Which is, I guess, part of Chrysler, Plymouth Voyager. And there was a man who uses crutches, whose name is, Frank Gardner. And Frank Gardner was a man who happens to use crutches, but he wrote a testimonial letter. He wrote a letter to Plymouth saying that he loved this car, it was a great car. And what Plymouth decided to do was use him in an ad. They interviewed a number of people, and it so turns out that Frank was the best salesperson for the ad, so they used him. And it's a very, very positive ad, and in fact, what it did, though, is that it directly changed the attitudes of a guy named Bruce Montgomery, who's the director of the ad. And one of the things in advertising that's stated in several of these articles is that there's a fear that using a performer with disabilities will distract the audience's attention from either a product or a performance. And that's one reason that disabled actors have trouble finding work. Another concern is that an audience might feel uncomfortable in the presence of a disability, which kind of flies in the face of what was said before about when you're in the dark of a movie theater or a regular theater, that you can deal with it on a private level, and you may not be able to deal with real life as other people in the real life world, but at least you can begin to deal with it on one-to-one level. So it says, in television advertising, the criteria for the use of a person with a disability would hinge on the disability, not distracting attention from the product. And that's what Bruce Montgomery, who's the director of this ad, says. However, after working with Frank Gardner on a Warrior ad, quote, I certainly wouldn't write off using someone who was disabled in another ad. Actually, it turned out that his handicap was more relevant. The person was simply right for the product, because he loves the car, and that's what they want to do, they want to sell the car. And I think that the issue on McDonald's or some of the other ads, in fact, it's interesting that McDonald's was actually one of the first restaurants to have Braille menus. Mm-hmm. And I've always wondered about that. What was that all about? Why did they develop Braille menus? And do they, in fact, have some kind of, you know, Jane was talking before about the singing group that has a policy of not performing in areas that aren't accessible. Does McDonald's have an overall five-year plan for disability accommodations? And the Braille menu was phase one, and the advertising campaign was another. And are they going to keep going with this? And are they going to maybe hire people? So maybe that's the next point, is you should maybe increase the plan for two of us. What Bruce Montgomery, in fact, closes with is the country seems to be changing its attitudes. People generally are becoming more tolerant, more accepting of differences, and not so rigid. I'm seeing this in many aspects of life, and advertising is just one. And what you have, in fact, on the back of Disability Rad, if you don't have this journal, it is the best.
Wow.
We have subscribed to it in the Office for Disabled Students for some time. It's out of Kentucky, and it is probably the most radical disability rights journal in the country. It comes out 6 times a year. And this was a special issue last year. The entire issue was on TV's concept, and there was a review of mass and whatever. And as Rebecca was saying before, what's interesting to do is to look through. I find the one particularly offensive on page 4, the made-for-TV movie called Thou Shalt Not Commit Adultery. And this was I'm sorry to say that I missed it, and I try to miss it.
Oh, me too.
The made-for-TV, let's put it this way, made-for-TV movies are often disgusting. And so if you think of made-for-TV movies as not always being the best to begin with, disability probably fits in a continuum of not so great made-for-TV movies. But here you have the happy couple, the husband becomes disabled, and the giant moral question is, will the husband, who is now using a wheelchair, give his wife permission to have an affair with an able-bodied man? Because therefore he can...
Really, that's the only way they're going to be.
Absolutely.
Another thing on advertising, Susan, that Cagney and Lacey thing that we've talked about so much, it was such a good episode, and yet the promo for the Cagney and Lacey thing, you know, those 60-second, not even those 15-second promos they did, they said, the promo for the show was, mugger preys on helpless.
Exactly.
Absolutely ruined that section of the show because they destroyed the whole thing. The advertising is often terrible.
The producers had no control over the promos, and that's really
exactly
coming attraction.
What I'd like to do really is give people some strategies on how to deal with some of these things. First of all, the back page of the Disability Rag handout has the names and addresses of the three major networks and says, really to do both write letters when there's something positive as well as when there's something negative. I talk all the time about writing letters when there's something good, and I never get around to doing it. And the positive stuff is very, very important. So I don't emphasize that enough. The other thing is to really, when you're looking at things, look at kind of what I call cross-equity issues. So that if it's a portrayal about disability, look at what they're doing in terms of gender, in terms of class, in terms of race. I put up three flyers over here on the side that was, again, it was out of the Disability Rag piece. And they say, this was a person who had done a survey of 327 different, what he calls crip shows, which is to say disability-related shows over the last,
And according to the estimate of this person and looking at 327 different shows over the last 10 years, that blindness was featured in 23% of the films, making it TV's most popular disability. And then close behind St. Louis was 22% of the disabilities in wheelchairs, and then 21% were deaf characters. In fourth place were amputees, account for 10% of programming. And the other disabilities were developmental disabilities, short stature, brain injuries, cerebral, cerebral palsy, and sensory deficits. And then he goes on to say that as with most TV characters, I mean, TV itself is racist, classist, homophobic,
sexist.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have to figure, you know, disability is going to be part of that. And one of the things that I think
we might try to do is change
what TV is all about to begin with. But as with most TV characters, fictionalized disabled people are depicted as being white. Few blacks are smattered across the country. There's less than 5 Hispanics and 1 Asian Pacific. And Jane has just reported this is very similar. 64% of TV's disabled characters are male, and 36% female. So again, TV's portrayal of disability mirrors what we have with respect to all of the groups. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was disability hierarchy issues. The idea that if you look at all the disabilities, that there's some disabilities that are considered more okay than mm-hmm. others. Mm-hmm. And the show that you talked about before called And Your Name is Jonah, I think was very good in some ways, but there was a quote that I read about the show which said that the institutionalized son was not retarded, he was just deaf. Mm-hmm. Now, if you probe that a little bit, there's a real negative thing on retardation. And retardation and mental illness are definitely at the bottom of a disability hierarchy. So that I think we need to watch that too, that we want better portrayals of all the disabilities, mm-hmm. but not at the expense of others.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the TV show which used a young man with Down syndrome? The
yes.
central character, and one was a fall guy, and the other was a story of a kid.
The actor?
Yes, yes, both cases. The actor was
mentally
Down syndrome child.
Oh, there's another thing with this. You realize we have a black midget on Webster, so it's number one. We have
he's not midget.
He's a midget. He's not a midget.
He's a girl.
What is it?
He's a girl.
He's 14 years old.
Yeah, but his brother didn't grow until he was 15. He's the same size. His brother's now 6 foot.
Well, he's being portrayed in the television show as being, they're acknowledging those. Of course, they did say he was going to grow in the show. But, I mean, he is a little real life. Well, he's portrayed in the show as being shorter than his peers. In other words, he's black.
The other thing that I want to talk about is, well, I've given you also another handout, which is called Guidelines for Reporting and Writing about People with Disabilities.
Oh, wow.
We've talked about language a lot this afternoon anyway. But this is I think it's probably one of the best things that's out there on language and disability. And it's in fact the Performers with Disabilities Subcommittee routinely sends this out to producers and writers, especially in Screen Actors Guild. The other thing I want to talk about was access issues within the media, such as sign language interpreting and making things accessible. There are a number of film distributors that will distribute captioned films. But oftentimes they'll be distributed with two versions. When we do our film festival every year, we try to get as many films that are captioned as possible. And yet, there was one particular company that there was a film that's about deafness, and they offered two versions of the film, the captioned version and the non-captioned version. Now, if you're going to offer a captioned version, it should be one version that's captioned. But again, the idea of the producer, it's kind of like going back to the advertising thing, that the captioning is going to bother the non-hearing impaired viewer, and therefore we're not going to have it on. Therefore, we will make two versions so that if a person is going to purchase a film for use in a film festival or whatever, if they think that they're not going to have any deaf people coming, well, then they'll purchase the non-captioned versions that doesn't bother them. So I think we need to be aware of those issues too, and to try to lobby for more captioning. It's interesting to me the number of things on TV that have either closed captioning or that have a sign language interpreter, and how those decisions are made, and that we should, it seems to me that every time, not that I would ever want to watch Reagan, but it would seem to me a politically correct thing that if Reagan's going to be on television, there should always be open captioning. Closed captioning is the device where you can purchase, a hearing impaired person can purchase for several $100s, a device that will then have captions, but it's only those shows that have been selected by the Captioning Center in Boston to be captioned.
And if you look at the New York Times, you can see in the TV listings those things that say CC, which means closed captioning. But if it's open captioning, it would be there for everyone, including hard of hearing people, people that for whatever reason need to have the captioning.
Yeah, except when Cuomo, the governor makes his speeches.
He always has an interpreter.
An interpreter there, and on television, the interpreter is quite clear.
Okay. And at least one of the fundamentalists Sunday morning.
The only president to have all his speeches interpreted was Carter. And that was only because of his, he couldn't be lip-read because he had a cement lip. His upper lip never moved when he talked. So people couldn't lip-read him on TV, which is hard to do anyway.
Anyway,
And my final kind of strategy or concern is, What are some of the graduate schools doing about issues of disability? Again, it's kind of the issue of women's studies. We can talk about trying to increase the number of women in all kinds of positions in society, but until we change the history of our society and make that history inclusive of across gender, across race, across disability, where are we going? So I have a question in terms of what are film schools, journalism schools, acting and directing schools, broadcasting programs around the country doing in terms of getting this kind of information that Jane and I have given you today to the budding writers, directors, actors of the future. And I guess, actually, I guess we have to start taking this workshop on the road and take it over to the School of Journalism at Columbia.
How about starting earlier and going to art and design for high school kids?
We could do that, sure. I think with that, we'd like to kind of either close it up or open it up. We've got about 5 minutes left for questions or comments. And we do have a very brief evaluation form that we would like for you to do. And please feel free to write comments about the earlier time of the day if you want. Is there anything else about this workshop or any other things that we haven't touched on?
Yeah, Sesame Street. I just want to tell you a success story with Sesame Street. I have two nieces who are 19 years old, and they were brought up more or less on Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. And Sesame Street has had a continuing presence of people who are deaf.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my nieces started a sign club at Bronx High School Signs. And
as a result of watching Sesame?
Well, I think partially because it was so, she already knew what deafness was, you know. And so she became an interpreter for a student who was deaf at Bronx High School Science and Classes.
That's great.
And has continued in college.
Uh-huh.
And that's an example of the acceptance issue.
Uh-huh.
You know,
that's
okay.
Yeah.
But the club is very successful in Bronx High School Science.
That's great.
And it's seen as another language.
Well, and it's funny because that also ties to the college curriculum because with respect to learning disabilities, you know, there are a number of colleges around the country that have a very strong foreign language requirement. And certain schools, very few, but certain schools are now permitting students to take American Sign Language in satisfaction of the foreign language. That or computer science or courses in literature and translation or whatever. But the more the American Sign Language is brought into the mainstream, and Sesame Street certainly did. Linda Bowe.
Yeah.
Really,
really did.
Was there a program that had a disabled child? I don't remember something about Rhoda. Or was it Rhoda or one of those names? I don't know because I did. Julie Kavner once also played in the
Yes. She did a great job.
Superb. The Richard Thomas, is that the one?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they're dealing with that two retarded people getting married. They're dealing
that's
with
right.
Multiple
two
times.
Retarded people getting married. Richard Thomas played
great.
The other one.
And she was
And it was again romance and disability.
And they had
the
same thing on Hotel again, just about several months.
And that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. These two mentally retarded people,
mm-hmm.
I think both of them were mongoloid. One was on, it was Quincy,
mm-hmm.
about
yeah.
not doing life-saving stuff on mentally retarded kids and mongoloid
mm-hmm.
children and Down syndrome.
Down syndrome.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And what was so interesting was they actually used a Down syndrome kid as the actor.
Uh-huh.
He did superbly well. In fact,
uh-huh.
opened up their eyes to what Down syndrome was. And the other was on the Fall Guy, work of a Down syndrome
hmm.
child as an actor. and he's very successful to really open your eyes to production. I love the way they put it. He was easy to work with.
Well, Performers with Disabilities was instrumental in finding the two wheelchair users who were in the Levi's ads. Mm-hmm. They were the, And in fact, I mean, Performers with Disabilities can also be for student performers. So, I mean, if you know of anybody who's interested, they have monthly meetings. I think the next week's is a meeting next week. And because there are also a lot of roles for extras, okay? And the whole idea of an extra just being, you know, a person in a crowd on the street. And why not make $100, you know, especially if that crowd is supposed to be your average New York City crowd. Performers with Disabilities, it's the flyer that I gave you.
Yeah,
and they're having a meeting next week. If you call the upper right-hand corner, it says New York Branch, 957-5370. And ask them when that meeting is. Or you could call my office on Monday. We have a little card. I just can't remember. I think it's Tuesday afternoon.
In the packet, there's a couple other things. There's an article called Screening Stereotypes, which is by Paul Longmore, who's done a lot of research in this area. And he's got another paper coming out on the whole idea of disabled people in media through history and how ideas have been incorporated through history. And we've also attached to the back a sheet that we use in our office, which is the brochure that I gave you from Access to Equity, on Facts on Women with Disabilities, which gives us a little better idea of how the whole thing breaks down and why women are just that bit different than men, which is really a significant difference. And the statistics are fairly staggering. Yeah. So that fact sheet and some resources on the back of that for books.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to look at Sweet Honey in the Rock. Because the base, the single in the base, has a PhD in, I think, speech pathology and works really the deaf. In fact, she always sighs as she's singing, and it's very confusing because they have a sider.
Huh.
What is interesting. She's the base. She's the base. And it's a very interesting kind of thing, but what's interesting is now they include their son as a member of the group.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the name is Holly Near. Holly Near is a good example of that, too. Holly Near is a feminist folk singer who always performs with Susan Freundlich.
Yes.
Susan Freundlich is an ASL interpreter. And whenever they do a concert, Susan is always there interpreting. And in fact, there's an absolutely wonderful movie that we've used in our film festival a couple years ago called See What I Say. And it's a film about being deaf and being female, really. I mean, the majority of the women, majority of the characters in the film that are deaf are women. But in fact, it's that film that's offered in both captioned and non-captioned versions. And I've never understood that because
you just asked Holly why.
It's the film distribution house that did it, and I wonder why Holly, knowing her politics, permitted that to happen. And it's also interesting that this particular distribution house, which is the only female headed distribution house in New York, it's called Filmmakers Library. The only films that have captioning are films about deafness. And so there's also that kind of in-group disability thing that only deaf people watch films that need to be interpreted and they're about deafness. And
deaf people only watch films about deafness.
Exactly. They don't watch anything else.
Right.
Exactly. And, I mean, that was true of the after-school special. There have been a number of those after-school specials, but there was also one about a young teenage girl who, in fact, as a way of dealing with her deafness, wanted to become punk. And it was her way of, she felt different in the group, but it was different because she couldn't hear and she couldn't lip read a lot of the time. So she thought she'd kind of go punk. And, you know, it's almost a variation on the mask theme of if you kind of go a little different, you can be more accepted in that group. But in fact, in this after-school special, she wasn't that accepted in the punk group either.
That was an excellent portrayal. It was so realistic.
But there was no open captioning of that film. And not only that, but I remember seeing the very beginning of it where there was a voiceover. There was a total, the scene opened up, and off camera, those of us that were hearing that were watching it, could hear the announcer saying, and blah, 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 something's happening. And of course, if there were, which I'm sure there were thousands of deaf children and adults watching that show, because how often is deafness portrayed? And here it is, they've got a voiceover in the background. So again, it's like little pieces that need to be brought together.
The same thing in that movie, Love is Never Silent, where Phyllis Freleth and Sam Edwards were signing to each other. And the woman star, whoever portrayed the child, was also signing, and she was a very good, though not a natural signer, she was a very good signer. But whenever they were giving an idea, that also was not open captioned, but so much of it was being signed. Anyone who used sign language could really enjoy the movie. But instead, the filmmaker and the director shot those scenes, say, from up here, over someone's shoulders, and you can never see the sign because everything was given auditorily, and it was the hearing daughter gave everything auditorily that her mother was saying so that you didn't have to be able to see the sign language, but that destroyed it for the deaf community, which is really a contradiction for a movie like that. It's not fair.
Well, it's the old story. I have to take little steps forward towards access and equity. And obviously what performers with disabilities is trying to do is increase the awareness of both performers who have disabilities acting in a variety of roles, not just as disabled characters, but as any character. But then they have to start looking at these trickier kind of content issues that sometimes I think kind of get left to the side. All of us need to write a lot more letters. So, and there is a group, in addition to performers with disabilities, they're also on the back page of Disability Rag. Carrie Susan Hartman is with the media office in California. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Disability Rag talks about is really the majority of soap operas, daytime dramas, whatever they call them, are produced out in California. And if anybody would ever like to do a small research study on soap operas and disability, I'd like to see somebody do that.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Women's issues and disability and soap operas. I occasionally watch a few when I'm homesick. And Days of Our Lives, Gloria Loring, who is a singer, she's now in fact a spokesperson for the American Diabetes Association. And she gave birth to a child with diabetes. Now, it's what she said, she happens to be a spokesperson for ADA, and yet how they dealt with her child having diabetes on the show was, you would have thought, I mean, the child, the whole family was in turmoil of this baby with diabetes, and what were they going to do, and all hell broke loose. It was really an incredibly negative, victimized, stereotypic portrait of coping with diabetes. And we never ever met an adult with diabetes. It would have been nice if they could have introduced us to a doctor or a nurse on the program who had diabetes, who could have met with this mother and then shown her how, you know, like the way that Dallas has dealt with the Down syndrome issue.
They had something like that 20 years ago on, I remember these things, 20 years ago on, what was that man? Doctor, not Kilda, the other one was
Marcus
on.
Marcus Welby.
No.
Doctor,
they had a hard-looking, sexy, dark-haired man.
Ben Casey. He's still on at 2:30 in the morning.
Ben Casey had an episode about an epileptic woman who then goes to therapy, and she meets the therapist who also has it. I'll never forget it. Another thing they had recently is very interesting, is the biography of those two comedians, Bud Abbott and Louis Costello. Mm-hmm. Bud Abbott was epileptic. They just divulged that. All that stuff's coming out, and I'm just saying it's coming out, even when they're not a concentrator, it's coming out big. Mm-hmm. And that was 1978. And nobody ever knew all those years.
But remember, always look at the gender issues, and the other issues too. There is a wonderful project called Project Heroes out of the Churchill School for Learning Disabled Kids. Churchill School has got to be one of the best schools in the city. And Claire Wurzel did this project, and it's a fabulous project. And it's a 25-minute videotape about learning disabled adults meeting with learning disabled kids about how they cope with their learning disabilities. The film is wonderful, and there's a learning disabled man and a learning disabled woman, so there's equity there. However, the teacher manual just came out about 3 weeks ago. And in the back of the manual, it has a list of famous learning disabled people in history. They're all men.
Oh,
they're all men.
She didn't put Salisbury?
No, she didn't.
She didn't put...
She's going to hear from me about it, too. But it's interesting because I wish I brought it. She's an old friend of mine, too. And what's interesting, though, is that you have this list, and it's famous learning disabled people in history, and then it asterisks on the bottom, this list was compiled from famous American men in history.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, that's so funny. Because Claire has two daughters.
The thing is that learning disabilities is a particular disability category, like MS, which MS is the reverse, where it tends to occur more with the female population than male, but LD tends to, at least at the early childhood level, tends to be more boys than girls, and yet the latest research is that it's really 50-50, and that it's that little boys are overly diagnosed because they don't fit into the standard pupil role in schools. And one of the things that we see here at Barnard is very, very bright learning disabled women students who come into Barnard in their whole lives, they never knew they were learning disabled, and they get to their first or second year at Barnard, and then we diagnose them as being learning disabled.
So we need to break that myth that LD only affects a male population.
Yeah, and only, but you know, one of the things is that the male population has names for their LD. My daughter, I don't have a name for her disability, and you want to talk about having a problem, because I keep asking for a name. I need a shorthand, you know, because if you go through all the symptoms, it's difficult, and I don't even have a name, and I'm absolutely certain that a hell of a lot of kids have this, you know.
Yeah.
But she's a girl, and, you know, yes, and I got that old sword that usually only hits boys.
That's
and
right.
They're so surprised she's not left-handed.
And how's that supposed to make her feel? You know, how's that supposed to make her feel that, you know, well, that mostly happens to boys. I have a friend whose child is 10 years old and is at Churchill. And I, you know, she just transferred there this year, and she is one of two girls in her entire class. And I said, well, how does the teacher talk about that? And she said, well, we try to talk about it, but it is complicated because there are all these boys there, and she would like to have more girls that she could meet that have her disability, so she can have some, you know, solidarity.
I had that problem, I guess, like, there are only a few girls.
Women at your rehab center.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But there were a lot of men?
Many. Well, mostly. With ratios, outrageous.
That's interesting.
So
very
difficult. There's female psychologists and mostly therapists.
But then what kind of role models does that give you for women that you meet in rehabilitation,
right.
Not being peers but being your therapist?
Mm-hmm.
That's a difficult situation too.
Did they introduce you to any disabled women, like in your like at home or anybody else that you could talk with?
They try. Bring some in.
Right.
But really, well, the independent living centers in the area do have more. But really.
But when you come to Barnard next week, we'll hook you up with someone.
Good.
We're way over time also, so
one girl,
one
women.
Four, 10, 15 or whatever.
And there's another session. But thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Here's your evaluation.
And everything
great.
Else.
Thanks.
You know I never liked that.